Wendell, you answered all the questions.
I think they're just aware of the hour. We can handle 30 more minutes, but that's all.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Our third paper tonight is delivered by Dennis Dove, who serves as Minister of the Gospel in Lexington, Nebraska. Dennis was raised in a military family, lived in England, France, and Germany, and Libya as a child. After his father retired, he moved to Oklahoma, where he finished high school. After high school, he attended Oklahoma Christian College for 2 years, married Betty. They moved to Lubbock in 72, where he completed the Sunset School of Preaching and School of Mission in February 1975. He later completed a BA in Bible at OCC in 84. He's currently working on a master's at Kearney State in Nebraska and has begun a master's program at ACU in Bible. His wife is Betty. They've been married for 13 years. There's 3 sons, Ben 10, Tim 8, and Jonathan 3. After completing his work at Sunset, the family moved to Athens, Greece, where they worked in a team effort in a suburb of Athens. After 4 years, they moved to the island of Cyprus and then returned to the States, and they've been in Lexington, Nebraska ever since. Dennis now is going to speak on this paper, Effeminate Men and Disabled Women, Pagan Insights to the Veil, in 1 Corinthians 11, 2-16. Dennis.
I really feel it an honor to be here tonight and to address you on a subject that's very important to me. I had planned on approaching it a little bit differently, and I was really moved by many of the messages in the last day. And one thing that Brother Humble said tonight was that, you know, we have to have a desire to restore New Testament Christianity. And I think that that means submitting ourselves, no matter what it means, to the will of Christ. And I think Paul touches on that in chapter 11, verse 3 of 1 Corinthians. I want you to realize that the head of every man is Christ. I think maybe we forget that in the rest of the text. We're so concerned about women and men that we forget that Christ is at the head of it all, and that God is the head of Christ. And so whatever Paul says here, it's with the authority of Jesus Christ at the head. And in our desire to restore New Testament Christianity, that means that we should be willing to do whatever God wants us to do, if He is our head. And however you interpret this passage, if God is saying that women should wear veils like Dio Chrysostom describes that they wore in Tarsus, very heavy, thick veils that literally covered the face, if he's talking about the type of veil that Jeremiah Joachim in the book Jerusalem in the Times of Jesus, in which there was a woman that said the roof of her house has never seen the hair of her head. Never in her life. If Paul is talking about that veil, how many of you would be willing to wear that veil? You don't have to raise your hand. How many of you would be willing to wear that veil if you were convinced that that's what Paul was talking about? It's easy for us men to look at the women It's another thing for me to volunteer something for my wife. And so this is, a lot of this is where our women are today, struggling with this. And I've known a lot of women who have struggled with this over the years. And I've known a lot of women who just don't deal with it at all. I know a lot of husbands who just don't deal with it at all. It's easier just not to think about it. And I hope that whether you agree with what we discussed tonight or not, that you won't let it lay to the side, but that you will approach it and determine in your heart what your head wants you to do. And then in the spirit of restoring New Testament Christianity, to be willing to submit yourselves to that. And I've respected so many ladies over the years who have chosen to wear a covering on their head, as they understand it to be teaching. And it takes a bit of courage to do that. And I admire them for being willing to do that. We're going to be looking at 3 points tonight. One that we've already touched on briefly, and that's on the veil. Secondly, we're going to be looking at the religious pagan environment of Corinth and the world of the first century. And then we're going to be looking at what was going on in Corinth, in the church at Corinth, and the problem that it might have had. First of all, as far as the veil is concerned, the modern theologians that I've been reading, to my surprise, have rejected the idea that all women wore coverings on their heads. If you want a detailed description of that, you can read in Kittel's Theological Dictionary, the article under Calypto. And in that article, Ipke comes to the conclusion that Paul must be forcing a Jewish custom on the Corinthian church. And he presents evidence, and I've read it elsewhere also, that it was not a universal practice for women to wear these heavy veils over their head. But it was a Jewish custom and an Eastern custom, and the further east one went, the more strict they were on that custom. There is a question as to whether the Greek women even wore veils. Some did. There's a question whether they all did. And that was startling to me when I first noticed that. And I think in verse 15 that Paul recognized that was not a universal practice. When he says in verse 15, for long hair, that word long hair is the effeminate styled hair, that the effeminate styled hair is given to a woman in place of a veil. Now the word in place of there is andi. It means instead of, a substitute for. I had a brother up in Lexington who read the passage and someone was saying, why don't your women wear veils? He said, well, Paul said that her hair is given to her instead of a veil. And he answered it right there. Now, the word veil in verse 15 is different than the word used in the rest of the text. The word veil in verse 15 is the word periboleo, which is actually the word to describe a cloak or mantle. Elsewhere, we're going to be looking at the word cover, about what that means. But in short, I think the word cover in the other passages is a covering which was used to disguise someone or to cover up the natural appearance of something. The word covering earlier is used in Leviticus 3 verse 9 to describe the fat that covers the entrails in the Septuagint. It's the same word. It's a word in Isaiah 6 2 which says the angels covered their faces with their wings. It's the same word cover. And so the word itself does not imply any type of material covering. And that's important to notice also. To me, it was important to find that out. It did have to do with some covering of some kind. And I think in verse 6 and 7 that it's obvious that this covering, whatever it was something which categorized woman as woman and man shouldn't wear that. And so I think finally what the word cover means, the katakalypto, is the thing that makes woman look like a woman. It could be a very heavy veil that the Jewish woman wore. It could also be the very effeminate hairstyles that the Greek women wore and that Ovid describes in his book on love. And I wish I had the overhead projector. I have a... Oh, it's working? Well, sure, I'm glad I asked. I would have gone through the whole thing. And let me give you a list of some of the people that we'll be referring to. If I can get it focused. Oh, no wonder we weren't working it. It's turning the wrong switch. These are some of the people that we'll be referring to. In my own quest to know what Paul's talking about, I decided just to go to the classics themselves and start reading them. And I haven't even touched on hardly any of them, but these are a number of them that I have read quite a bit in. And we'll be referring to a number of those. As far as what was going on in the first century, there were men who were dressing themselves up like women. And that was shocking to me. I didn't know that happened. But it was happening everywhere. Religious men were doing it. Pagan religious men in the mystery religions especially, of Apollo, Dionysus, the Great Mother religion of Rome, the Isis religion, and others. The men were wearing effeminate garb and combing their hair effeminately and wearing it long and decorated. Dio Chrysostom describes men who wore effeminate garb as being smitten by the Furies. Lucian, in the book Goddess of Syria, described a group of men called Galli. And these men were eunuch priests. They had castrated themselves while in a frenzy, and following their castration, they wore feminine garb, wore their hair long, and decorated. Long hair that Paul said in verse 15, men should not wear long hair. He forbade that. It's disgraceful. I'd like to show you a picture of the god Dionysus. This is in the Journal of Hellenic Literature. And in this article here, they have pictures of, I hope you can make this out. It turned out better than I thought. In this article, there were pictures of both Apollo and Dionysus. Euripides wrote a play, the Bacchus play. And he describes Apollo or Dionysus as being a really effeminate person, long effeminate hair, decorated effeminately. And he was walking around and considered very effeminate. And if you can notice his hairstyle, very decorated and plaited like a woman would do, and having curls hanging down over the shoulder. Okay, now Paul in verse 4 has said, every man who prays or prophesies with hangings from his head dishonors his head. In my opinion, what Paul was talking about was this type of effeminate style. It was something that religious men did. And the Christian church, for some reason, was being encouraged to modify or to imitate this pagan style. Plutarch describes the priest of Heracles, who he says they don women's garb and they fasten on a women's headdress while in sacrifice. Apuleius, in the book The Golden Ass, described a clan of worshipers. They were a group of boys, and their leader called them girlies. They had long, effeminate hair, and in their religious frenzy, they would let their hair out, throw their head, toss it around, and throw it around in a circle. They were very effeminate men. They would cut themselves, and Apuleius describes it as effeminate blood being thrown everywhere in their religious frenzy, in their ecstasy. Apuleius also described a group of uninitiated males into the religion of Isis. There was processions that would walk through the streets. And these men, it says, one group of these men had long hair added and fixed upon his head, and he walked delicately in form of a woman. Now, these are people who are near first century period. And Paul was aware of what was going on in his world. There's one that I want us to read in more detail. Would you let me know when I have 5 minutes left so I can know how much I have to rush through? I practiced this several times and finally got it 23 minutes, then decided to change the way I was going to approach it. So I don't know how long it's going to take. Now, I'd like for us to read Philo. Philo was a... Philo was a Jewish philosopher down in Alexandria. He's talking about homosexuals at first. Then he makes the application that the reason why homosexuality and dressing effeminately is becoming so popular is because it's so encouraged in the pagan religions. Much graver than the above is another evil, which has ramped its way into cities, namely pederasty. That's sodomy and stuff. In former days, the very mention of it was a great disgrace. But now it is a matter of boasting, not only to the active, but to the passive partners who habituate themselves to endure the disease of effemination. They let both body and soul run to waste and leave no ember of their male sex nature to smolder. Mark how conspicuously they braid and adorn the hair of their heads, how they scrub and paint their faces with cosmetics and pigments and the like, and smother themselves with fragrant unguents, for of all such embellishments used by all who deck themselves out to wear a comely appearance, fragrance is the most seductive. In fact, the transformation of the male nature to the female is practiced by them as an art and does not raise a blemish or a blush. These persons are rightly judged worthy of death by those who obey the law, which ordains that the man, woman who debases the sterling queen of nature should perish unavenged, suffered not to live for a day or even an hour, as a disgrace to himself, his house, his native land, and the whole human race. And the lover of such may be assured that he is subject to the same penalty. Now he goes on. There's one author that I'll be giving you a bibliography shortly at the end, who stopped at this point and thought that Paul was talking simply about homosexuality. And I thought, well, maybe there's something to that. I went on the next page, and the Philo talks about why they're doing this and why it's so much encouraged. And he says the reason is, I think, to be found in the prizes awarded in many nations to licentiousness and effeminacy. Certainly you may see the hybrids of man and woman continually strutting about through the thick of the market, heading the processions at the feast, appointed to serve as unholy ministers of holy things, leading the mysteries and initiations and celebrating the rites of Demeter. Those of them who, by way of heightening still further their youthful beauty, have desired to be completely changed into women and have gone on to mutilate their genital organs, are clad in purple like signal benefactors of their native lands and march in front escorted by a bodyguard, attracting the attention of those who meet them. Now, of these things that he mentions here, Philo recognizes that there are men who braid and adorn their hair. There are men who paint their faces with cosmetics. There are men similar to these homosexuals who are religious men, who in the name of their religion are heading the processions, they're leading the mysteries of Demeter, they're serving as unholy ministers of holy things. Very religious men who are doing this. And as I've mentioned, these other sources confirm that there was this problem of men looking effeminate in pagan religions. I believe that's what Paul is talking about in 1 Corinthians 11. After all this evidence, and even if we can show, and I have, that there were effeminate men, and if I can show that there were disheveled women, and you don't know what that even means yet, probably, I'll define that shortly. The most we can conclude is that perhaps this was a problem in Corinth. You know, I've been comforted by realizing that Paul was talking about this, and it made sense to the passage to me. But we weren't there. And the most we can conclude is perhaps this was what Paul was talking about. There are other explanations, a lot of other explanations. This one makes sense to me. As far as women being disheveled, the evidence isn't quite as strong as we have for the men. And I was kind of surprised by that also. I was surprised by a lot of things as I study this. But the women, it doesn't talk about them removing their veils as much as it talks about men who were effeminate. There was more of a problem, I believe, with men being in their thinking to become effeminate and lower themselves to the level of women, thus equating the sexes, than it was for the women to throw off their veils in declaration of their freedom. In fact, women were so low on the social economic status in Greece that for them to throw off their veil would have been to make themselves even lower. It was a disgraceful thing for a woman to appear disheveled or her hair all a mess or with her veil off. A Jewish woman could be divorced for appearing without her veil. It was a dishonorable thing. And to think that she was declaring her freedom in Christ didn't make sense to me. I think this was being practiced to humiliate both of the sexes. It was a disgraceful, dishonorable thing for man to appear effeminate. It was disgraceful, dishonorable for a woman to throw her veil off and to shovel her hair if she didn't wear a veil. And in both cases, they were humiliating themselves, men. And don't get yourselves mixed up in this pagan practice, what they were doing in their religions. The women. Disheveled means to cause the hair to become disarranged. It means to cause the hair to become untidy by pulling the hair and loosening it. Women in those days prided themselves very much in their tresses, decorating themselves. 1 Peter 3 talks about it, 1 Timothy 2 talks about it. The important thing for women should be the adorning of the inner person and not the hair. But they prided themselves in the hair. But in a state of religious frenzy, in a state of religious hysteria, the women were throwing off their veils, letting loose their curls, and were letting their hair fly everywhere in religious frenzy. Men who were letting their hair grow long were doing the same thing. It was a picture of religious ecstasy. It was what people did who were being inspired by the gods. And this is what you should do if you're being inspired. And the Christian women were being told, you're the true prophetesses. But for the world to recognize that, you need to do what they're doing. Men are the true prophets of God. But for the world to recognize you as prophets, you need to go along with what the world is doing. And Paul said that is wrong. The practice. Polybius described a woman called Danae who was dragged out of the temple of Demeter. They dragged her through the streets disheveled, uncovered. It's the same word that Paul uses in 1 Corinthians 11, to be uncovered. And I believe that she was in her prayers to Demeter and had disheveled herself while in her prayers, and they dragged her out to the streets to humiliate her in public. Tacitus described a group of women who he saw in a campaign who reminded him of Furies, women who were disheveled, running everywhere in the ranks of the armies. Levi described the crushing of the Bacchanale, the worship of Dionysus in Rome in 186 BC. And in the description of the crushing of the worship of Dionysus in Rome, he describes a group of matrons, of women, with disheveled hair, all torn up hair, that were running all around the streets, and they had torches that they were dipping into the river. A state of excitement, a state of frenzy that was characterized by these pagan religions. Euripides described the girls who were about to go into a state of frenzy as letting their hair fall free. In the mystery of the Lady Goddess at Lecusura, the women were not permitted to have their hair bound up when they were initiated into the religion. They had to let it hang loose. They had no choice. Orpheus described a group of women who, as they knelt around an altar, unbound their hair and let it hang free and wild. Tacitus again mentions Messalina, who was at a winemaking ceremony. She was surrounded by a group of women who were like bacchanals, excited by sacrifice or delirium. And she herself was there with disheveled tresses, he said. Theocritus, describing the rites of Adonis, said that the day after the feast, the women came out bare-breasted and hair awry. In the Encyclopedia Britannica, they described the priestess at Delphi as writhing on a tripod with her hair disheveled and uttering prophetic utterances in a frenzy. Now we're going to go into just kind of see what's going on in Corinth, and we're going to sum this up. That is the pagan insights into the veil and into the effeminate men that the title mentioned. And so if you don't get anything else out of the lesson, you may not remember any of these people, but there were effeminate men, there were disheveled women all around the world in that day. Now, let's go to Paul. What was Paul talking about here? In verse 2 and verse 16, Paul makes a contrast here. In verse 2, he says, I praise you in remembering me in everything. Verse 17, he says, in the following directives, I don't have any praise for you at all in the Lord's Supper. To me, that says that the church at Corinth did not have a problem with men doing this or women doing this. And he praised them for their practice. They kept the traditions. They were not having a problem with it yet. But in verse 16, there appears to be some who were contentious. Men who were apparently wanting to introduce it into the church. Perhaps the effeminate men that were converted in 1 Corinthians 6:9. Or the pagan women who are harlots for Aphrodite and other religions. The harlots in 1 Corinthians 6 could have been encouraging this practice. But Paul said, I praise you that you're not doing it. He says in verse 16, some people may be contentious trying to introduce it. They may even be accusing the churches elsewhere of practicing it. Paul says, we don't do it anywhere. Nobody has this practice anywhere. And don't you dare begin it in Corinth. You guys are doing great. And I see it as praise in 1 Corinthians 11, and encouragement to them that they are keeping Christ as the head of the church. As far as women uncovering, the word uncover and used in this text is the same word that's used in Leviticus 13:45. In that text, in the Septuagint, the Hebrew word that the word uncover represents is the Hebrew word which means to dishevel, to let the hair hang loose. And if you look in your Bibles, in the text, you'll find in the marginal readings of some of your texts, to uncover. The text actually says, let the hair hang loose. In Numbers 5:18, the same Hebrew word is used, a different Greek word. But again, the Hebrew word means to let the hair hang loose, to be disheveled. And that was the word that Paul used in 1 Corinthians 11. It's the only place it's used. And I believe that was a special word to uncover, meant not only to take the veil off, it would include that if they wore one, but it would go the step beyond that, uncovering themselves and disheveling their hair, letting it hang loose in a disgraceful way. To cover meant more than just putting a hat on. The high priest of God was commanded to wear a hat. It was not talking about that. There's another kind of covering. And I believe in verse 7 that it's the thing that women do, men don't do it. Men don't wear long hair, women do. So Paul was forbidding equating the wearing of effeminate garb for men and disheveling as a sign of religious frenzy for the women. Okay, I think that I do want to give you I'll just put them on the overhead projector. A list of four articles that I found quite helpful in describing these words. And if you choose to do further research on that, the ones that are circled red are the ones that talk about the Greek word meaning to be disheveled. It talks about homosexuals perhaps being the problem. None of them that I read describe the problem as I understand it to have been. But these will give some arguments for the definitions of the words. Okay?
Thanks very much, Dennis. Well, time is it? What questions do you have?
This issue of wearing a veil is quite a controversy. Certain foreign mission field, and many of the national brethren don't send this as a lazy bonus suspension. congregations have been disfellowshipped from other congregations as a result of this issue. Do you see it as a essential New Testament doctrine that needs to be emphasized by missionaries?
State the question in a way.
Okay. Question was, in certain mission fields, there is a lot of contention over women wearing veils to the point of disfellowshipping each other over not wearing it. Of course, with my understanding of it, Paul was not even talking about having to wear a veil. Because of that, I think that it is wrong to cause division in the point of disfellowshipping each other over not wearing it. Of course, with my understanding of it, Paul was not even talking about having to wear a veil. Because of that, I think that it is wrong to cause division in the body of Christ over that. But again, if the churches, if the women believe they should wear one, then I think they should. If they believe that they are disgracing God without it, then I think they ought to wear it, until they come to their own conclusions, just to be safe. But no, I think they, I don't personally think it should be a point of dissension at all. Now the question was, is Paul permitting the women to cut their hair, or is he talking about women cutting their hair to look like men? In one of the verses, Paul said if she's going to throw her hair off this way, she should go ahead and cut her hair also. And I think what he's saying there is if she's going to humiliate herself by disheveling her hair, which is a mark of shame and dishonor, then she should go ahead and cut her hair, because that is what women do who are actually shamed. Women who are really in distress. Women who have lost in great disasters. Like Plutarch talks about it. That in great disasters, women will shave their hair because they want to humiliate themselves further. And Paul says, if you want to humiliate yourselves this way, go ahead and cut your hair off like a man and humiliate yourself completely. But he knew they wouldn't do that because they prided themselves so much in their hair. Most women do. And I think the word, the idea of kome, the long hair, the effeminate hair, carries more the idea of the effeminate style than a certain length of hair. And so in my opinion, women can cut their hair, but it still needs to be effeminate. And there needs to be a distinction between a masculine type hair and an effeminate hair. And I think women should wear an effeminate hairstyle.
Just way in the back, that's all.
That was especially more the problem with the men than with the women. There is evidence that in the pagan religions that the men would reverse the roles, especially in the worship of Dionysus and in Apollo. They would reverse themselves. They would reverse the sexes. I haven't read nearly all the classical stories, but I haven't found women who dress themselves like men. I did read about the god Ishtar, the goddess Ishtar, who had a beard like a man and who dressed like a man. And there is some evidence of some of the goddesses that would have beards and would dress like men. But I didn't find it exactly a practice as far as in my study so far that women were actually doing this at that time.
Thank you.
I'll let Steve answer that. Well, that'd be yours. The question was, could the 20th century equivalent of that be the punk hairstyle for the girls, especially the real frenzied punk style? And
different rates than anymore.
Wasn't that rebellious? Kind of rebellious, like all these things?
Yeah, it was the in this passage anyway, it was the women who were doing it in a religious frenzy. And these women today who do this aren't in a religious state. But it was also like mentioned, as far as I know they're not. They could be. But in the first century, the women were permitted to do weird things in religion, and it was acceptable. And there is some research which says that part of the reason why people were attracted to the pagan religions, the mystery religions, is because the prophetesses who would go through these ecstasies was able to do something so contrary to the ordinary that she could in some way elevate her status in the community. And so it was a sense of rebelling in a religious atmosphere, but not outside of the religious atmosphere.
All right, see a hand way back there.
Apparently, also there's an aspect there of this being a sign of subjection for a husband. Now, keeping in mind that the Ayatollah Khomeini did group was trying to reimpose the veil in some difficulty in Iran. Mm-hmm. And that comes from modern people in the 6th century. How would you square your view of it?
The question was how can it be, if it's a religious frenzy, how can that be a repudiation of the male being the head of the woman, and how could it be a rejection of his authority over her? Abel Isaacson describes in detail, as far as from a Jewish background, what was happening, and that it was a very dishonorable thing for the women to throw their veil off. And the only women who did that were women who were freed of a husband. And they, before marriage, then they would appear with their hair without a veil on, the Jewish girls, if they were virgins. Any time after that was a really rebellious state. But again, in Corinth, I don't know that the women, there's some evidence anyway that the women were not wearing this veil at all. But for Jewish women to do that would be a rejection of this sign of modesty. I think it's Philo who talks about the veil being a sign of modesty for the woman. And for her to remove that would be a bad thing.
Yes, and there's a couple of passages. One is Plutarch and Aurelius saying the Romans, where the phrase having down on the head is used of a cloak being put over the head, and in Esther 6:12 in the Septuagint, where Haman goes to his house mourning down on the head with his head covered. Mm-hmm. That's that expression, down on the head, having down on the head, is the expression used in verse 4, 11 to 4, and that's usually taken perhaps from these parallels to mean that he has something put over his head. Mm-hmm. Is there any linguistic evidence that you found for where the expression having down the head is used for long hair?
The question was, in verse 4, Paul says he doesn't use the word cover in verse 4. He just says hanging or down from the head is the word that is the way he describes verse 4. And in Plutarch, he does mention that the men in mourning would cover their head, apparently with some kind of a cloth material to cover themselves. And the question was there any, is there any evidence that Paul is talking about actually hair in verse 4 as being the what's hanging down? And I wasn't able to find anything that it would be limited to hair in verse 4. With the pictures of Dionysus and Apollo who had these curls coming down, then I believe that could be what he's talking about. Of course, any man who would put on this veil, the woman veil, which they would do in some pagan religions also, then that would be a hanging down. But it's a hanging down, and the idea of covering, the word covering here is a very dramatic covering. It's not just a little hat or something. It's a big covering, a total covering. And so for the men to put this covering on would be to totally disguise themselves as women, where their natural person wasn't seen at all. They looked effeminate and like women. Clement of Alexandria, I forgot who it was in the Ana Nicene, Volume 1. There's a Clement of someone talks about not letting the men have curls hanging down their shoulders. That was wrong for that to happen. And so he kind of talks about the hair being that hanging down in that text. Let's see if I can get that article.
Yes, go ahead.
I've been taught in the past to accept the scriptures as literal, unless there is a good reason for considering them figuratively. Also to use secular documentation to support rather than to explain scripture. Mm-hmm. Can you address yourself to this issue? How many people, if they picked up the Bible and read 1 Corinthians 11, would have all of this material to support what has been presented to make a conclusion?
Okay, the question is, how could a Christian just pick up 1 Corinthians 11 and understand it in light of this? With that, in my own experience, I started off trying to get a clear slate. In 1979, I wanted personally to know what he was talking about, so I was tired of discarding the question, and I wanted to come up with my own understanding of it. And in my own quest, to not know Greek would be difficult. To understand 1 Peter 3 and the Christ going into the spirit world, or that is difficult to understand that passage. The man of sin in 2 Thessalonians 2 is extremely difficult to understand without some study in it. But I was able from the Greek to recognize that the word that Paul used here meant disheveled, from the Hebrew substitute in Leviticus 13:45. And so I started off with that idea, saying, you know, Paul uses a word which means disheveled. And I started thinking, could that be what he's talking about? And could the opposite of that be a very effeminate type of hair? And so I began with the hypothesis that perhaps Paul was talking about disheveled women and effeminate men. And that's how I began. And then I went to the classical sources to see if there was anything to that. And that's how I began. But it'd be very difficult, you know, without, like the Ethiopian eunuch, I suppose, understanding the text. But I do think from this text that you can understand that the long effeminate hair, the hair of woman, is given her in place of a veil. I think you can understand that.
Let's take one more question. I see several hands. Dennis, you raised a hornet's nest or whatever. And I'm sure he'll be pleased to stay around here and speak to whatever other questions there are. I see a hand back here. Who?
In verse 10, no one asks you to comment on the angels. If the authority on her head could then be just combed, neat, arranged hair rather than the necessarily veiled?
In my opinion, it could. In some translation, it says she should wear a veil on her head in verse 10, but that is not in the original language. In the original language, it says she should have authority on her over her head. And that has a lot of opinions on what that means. But I think it could mean either the decorated hair or the veil, whatever she would be wearing. But she has to keep it under control, not disheveled.
Well, thanks very much, Dennis.
Thank you.